My name is Kelvin Downs. I'm an alcoholic. So the day of the grace of God, miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a drink. It's October 10th, 1996. And, you guys picked that up real quick. In the States, we clap for that. That's a good deal. I'm really grateful to be here tonight. It's an honor and a privilege whenever I'm asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm excited. I can't even describe with words how beautiful it is here. I can't describe with words how wonderful everything is here. And I want to thank the committee for asking me here to share today. And I'm overwhelmed by a lot of the things that I've seen and a lot of the people that I've met and being taken so well care of. And I can't pronounce Rofer's name, but we call him Hal. And, and we were starting with a numbering system when we got here. We were like number one, number two, number three, because the names, we couldn't pronounce the names. And so then they started shortening them up for us. So we got everybody like American short names that kind of go with your Icelandic names. So it's kind of a cool deal. And Hal's had us at his house and Stina and they've been wonderful hosts. And Axel and Bodley, they took us around our first day here and spent yesterday with us. And then Axel put me on an Icelandic horse yesterday. And those horses are small, man. And I think it should have been riding me. And I don't know, but after about 400 or 500 meters, the horse was like, enough of this crap, and it threw me off. And so I got a big bruise all the way up my right side, my elbow's all sore, and I'm like, great, you know? And you should have seen them laughing. I mean, hey, they're just, you know, so it's good to see you guys cater to sensitive people and don't hurt their feelings. So that was great, and we've had a great time since we've been here. And Alcoholics Anonymous today is a place for me where I have the utmost respect for Alcoholics Anonymous, the steps, the traditions, actions that we take here. And it's kind of a funny thing because I didn't grow up really respecting much of anything but fear, because I grew up in an Air Force base in Minot, North Dakota. And on the Air Force base, as I was growing up, I had this problem with identifying with other people. And why I had a problem with identifying with other people is, I grew up and it's funny because a lot of you aren't going to believe this, but I might be related to some of you. And here's the reason why. On my mom's side, we have ties all the way back to the Vikings. And on my dad's side, ties all go back to Africa. So it's kind of one of these funny things. If you give you a kind of a mind's eye picture of me, if you can picture a Viking ship with 20-inch rims and fried chicken, you know, I mean, my name would be like Leroy Olison or something like that, you know, and that would be exactly how you'd be able to describe me. So some of you may not know it, but we might be cousins, you know. So, and I'm sure you're going to run home and tell everybody about that, you know. But I grew up, and I always felt different. I always had this feeling of being like a square peg trying to fit into a round hole. And I just, no matter what I did, it always seemed like I was off somehow. And I never quite felt that I connected with everybody else around me. Everybody seemed to be given this book on life. Everybody seemed to be able to know what it was real quick. And I didn't seem to have any of that. I didn't seem to be able to play well with others. You know, I should have been stamped when I came out of the womb, you know. It would have saved people time from getting hurt by me. Because I'm one of those guys that I want things to be my way. You know, I don't care what your way really is, but if, as long as it's my way, then I get along okay with everyone, you know. As soon as things don't go my way, then I start having trouble. So when I go through, if we're going to play blocks, we're going to play blocks like this. And as a kid, and if not, I figured out at a very early age, if people don't listen to you, you beat them into submission. And that's just the way things go. And I'm one of those people. I'm so driven by fear, and I'm so driven by uncertainty and the big secret that I'm not enough. I'm so driven by those things that that I lash out. And as a result of that, I'm a guy who spent his entire life fighting, trying to validate myself, trying to be somebody that tried to get away from the fear that way. And I grew up in a home that was interesting. There was all kinds of things going on all the time. And I remember just wanting desperately to find something to fill this hole that was in my gut. Because, see, I've got this hole that sits inside of me, and it's the kind of hole, when you look at me, you don't look at me, you look through a guy like me. I'm the kind of guy that's hollow and empty and shallow. And when you look at me, I just want to cover my eyes or look away, because I don't want to lock eyes with you people. Because, see, when I don't want to do that because I'm afraid you're going to see who I really am. I'm afraid you're going to see a pathetic loser who can't seem to do anything right in my mind. And no matter what I do, it just doesn't match up right. And the book describes it as being irritable, restless, and discontent. And I started off irritable, restless, and discontent. I started off that way, stayed that way, and eventually, when I got sober, irritable, restless, and discontent turned into homicidal, maladjusted, and insane. You know? I mean, I just, those weren't good enough words to describe what was wrong with me anymore. But when I was growing up, I had this feeling, and it's the kind of feeling that you just know there's not something there. And when I was about 12 or 13 years old, I got a chance to find the thing that fills the hole. I got a chance to drink. And for me, when I drank, it's a magical experience for somebody like me. Because all of a sudden, that hole slammed shut like a door in a hurricane. And everything, the big thing that happens is I get right-sized, I get right-shaped, and I seem to fit right in. And everything that's out there doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that I had this huge afro when I was a kid that I always wanted to be someone else, you know? I always wanted to be someone else. So I would get this Jerry Curl stuff, and I'd spray it in this big afro, and it would, like, drip down, and I'd pull this curly Q down because Michael Jackson was big when I was a kid. Now, I wouldn't want to be Michael now, you know. But Michael back then, Michael was the coolest thing on the planet, you know. And all he had to do was go, ee-hee, and everybody loved him, you know. So I figured, well, if it's good enough for Michael. So I got that stuff out, and I started spraying this hair, and I got this thing coming down. And I went out, and I got some pants that were black, and I rolled them up so my socks showed, and I put on those black penny loafer shoes, and I slipped on the jacket with the zippers that don't go anywhere. There ain't a pocket on that jacket. You know, you just open it up, and oh, you close it back up again. And something was missing. One white glove. So I got myself one white glove, and I walked into school that day in third grade, and I went, ee-hee! And no girls came running, but a bunch of dudes did to fight me, you know? Because you don't pull off Michael Jackson unless you're Michael Jackson, apparently, you know? I mean, Michael was cool when he was black, you know? I mean, it was back in that time frame, you know? And I always had this... I lived in these other places. When I drank, all of a sudden, I could dance better than Michael, you know? When I drink, you're just lucky I'm here, you know? Because all of a sudden, men fear me and women want me, you know? When I drink, everything just, you know? I drink like that, I feel like that, most importantly. Because, see, drinking does something for me that it doesn't do for my wife, that it doesn't do for other normal people and my in-laws and other people that I know. It doesn't do that for them. See, the thing that drinking does for a guy like me is that it slows everything down and it makes life seem possible for a guy like me. It takes away all my inadequacies, all my insecurities, and my big secret that I'm afraid everybody's going to find out, that I really am not enough. That big secret that I have doesn't exist. And all of a sudden, everything's moving. And what I ended up finding out when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous is there's two big aspects that happen for a guy like me. When I drink, I don't seem to be able to stop. When I can't stop, that's the phenomenon of craving. I take a drink, a metaphysical reaction happens in my body, and all of a sudden, I'm going to drink at any cost. And I don't know how many I'm going to have. I may have 10 or I may have 100. Because for me as an alcoholic, one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. So I will continue to drink once I start the process. Once I put a little gas in the tank, I start moving and I go. Well, I started, when I was drinking, before I started paying consequences, that's fine for a guy like me. But see, I started paying consequences for my drinking at a relatively early age. And I started paying these consequences, and you think that once you start paying those type of consequences, when you're hurting those type of people, the people that you love, the people that you care about, the people that are the well-meaning people of the world, when you think that they're the ones that you're hurting and those are the things that's happening, you think you'd slow down or you think you'd stop. Well, I tried doing that. But the thing that happens for a guy like me is if I didn't have alcoholism, I'd have been able to turn the switch off. Because I don't ever remember one time in the morning waking up and saying, you know, tonight I want to go to jail, you know. I'm really sick of being free. I hate the good food, you know. I'm going to go to jail for a while. I think I should do that. No, they never say that in the morning. I never woke up once in the morning and said, you know, tonight I want my mom to look at me and tell me she was ashamed she ever gave birth to me and get the hell out of her house and never talk to her again. I want to do that. That sounds like a good time. Let's tear my family apart, you know. I never woke up that morning, the morning that it happened. I never woke up the morning and said, you know, tonight I want to black out, and tomorrow morning when I wake up, I'll be covered in blood that's not mine and not remember where I've been, and then find out three people are in the hospital. See, I never woke up in the morning and said any of those things. I woke up in the morning with good intentions. I'm the good intention guy. I'm the bad action guy, but I'm the great intention guy. Because see, if you judge me by my actions, I'm a loser, I'm a felon, I'm a criminal, I'm a jerk, you know? If you judge me based on my intentions, I could be the Pope, and I'm not even Catholic or white, you know? I mean, if you judge me based on my intentions, I could very easily be him, because I become perfect and all-knowing and wonderful. All I'm really missing, by my intentions, all I'm missing is a cross, you know? I mean, I'm that guy. I become perfect by my intentions. Unfortunately, it's my actions that kill me every single time. Every single time my actions get to me. Because my actions start off with, I'm not going to drink tonight. Last night was terrible, and by about noon, I'm sitting there wondering, last night wasn't so bad. You know, it wasn't that bad, you know. I mean, it was okay, you know. Well, no, it was kind of bad. No, it was all by 3 o'clock. I can't remember why I wanted to stop, and I'm off and I'm running again. See, I remember the last day I got out of jail, and there was, and you guys, I was talking about this. They have these things called Mickey's in the States, and it's a malt liquor. It's an Irish malt liquor, Mickey's, but they have these little ones that are called that are like little Mickey's barrels, and I can't remember what the heck they're called right now. But I knew it last night at the halfway house. So if any of you were paying attention, tell me right now. Big Mouth, Mickey's Big Mouth. Thanks, Bob. You weren't even there. My sponsor drank like me. So I had these little Mickey's Big Mouths, and I'm getting out of jail, and I'm like, there is no way I can drink. I've got 4 felonies hanging over my head. You know, I've got all this stuff going on. I'm on paper. I'm going to prison, you know. And what happens to me is this thing that pops into my head. You know, those Mickeys, they're cute. They're only this big. It's like a 10-year-old should be drinking them, you know. I mean, they're tiny, and they're cute. You know, one of those isn't going to hurt me. So I go into the liquor store when I get out of jail after I swore I was never going to drink again. And I pick up a Mickey's wide mouth. But the problem is you can't just buy one of those because they don't sell them individually. He comes with 5 of his friends. And then, as an alcoholic, I'm very frugal when it comes to moving forward in life. And I was looking for the best deal. And for $2 more, they would come with 6 more friends. So you can get 12 of these. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to be drinking, so that means that's going to last me at least a month, you know? One little Mickey's wide mouth ended me up that night with felony assault and instigation of a riot. I don't know what happens when you drink, but me, that happens. And I have no reason to go back to that, except for the second part of my illness, the obsession of the mind. The thing that tells me it's going to be different this time. The thing that always tells me, no matter what, it's going to be different this time. You're not going to get caught. That woman, she's not going to leave you. Matter of fact, you're the best thing that's ever happened to her. She loves you. You're the man. She'll never leave you. And your family, they were just joking. They really don't want to disown you. You're going to be famous someday. And if they screw up, they're going to be living in a cardboard box, you know, and that's all of those things are going to happen and all this stuff. It's going to be great. And yeah, I know that if I drink and get caught again, I'm going to go to prison. But that they're never going to come give me a urinalysis test today. You know, they're not going to come after me today because, see, I know why. It's because it's Saturday. There's no way they're going to come after me today. And I'm off and I'm running again because, see, I have this thing that happens in my head where I don't remember the consequences of the last time I drink. You know, I don't remember the consequences that pop through that will keep me away from that. They become foggy. They become almost non-existent. And eventually they disappear like the mist. They're gone. And all I remember is the times when I feel like that square, where I feel like that round peg again, and where I fit right in and I feel complete. I don't remember any of the consequences. Well, everything started really burning to the ground. Everything is crashing and burning. Everything is going completely out the door. And I did well in sports in the States, and I had scholarship offers to play American football, and I had offers with the Canadian Football League to play Canadian football for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and I had scholarships across the United States to wrestle at 27 different schools. And I'm going through, and I can't keep it together, and I don't understand what's wrong with me. And because when people try to talk to me about my drinking, they're saying, why don't you stop this? What you got to quit. All you got to do is just stop. And you might as well just said, all you got to do is just fly without a plane, you know? I mean, because I don't know how to do that. It's very simple, they tell you. You just don't drink. I don't drink. I go insane. I'm a guy that when I'm not drinking, I hurt people. When I'm not drinking, I'm violent and I'm mean and I don't fit quite right. Drinking has an effect on me that it takes away the fear and it takes away the pain. It takes away the childhood memories. It takes away all of that crap out of my life. Drinking is the thing that makes me be all right, where I can look you in the eye and I have to be afraid. And I'm a big guy, but I spent my life cowering in fear, cowering of what you thought of me. I spent my entire life like that. As a result of spending my life like that, I'm a guy that's been in over 250 street fights. I've got a dent in the front of my head where a guy tried to kill me with a hammer. I've got a dent in the back of my head where a guy tried to kill me with a crowbar. I've been shot at. I've been stabbed. I've had all those things happen to me all because I'm afraid. See, I'm a guy, my life is driven and controlled and ran by fear. I don't have a solution to fix that fear except for drinking. Except for something. I'm the kind of guy, I don't know about you, but my favorite drink is free. My favorite drug is what do you got, you know? I mean, I'm real simple. I'm a human vacuum of self-gratification, you know? I mean, if it looks good, if I think a girl's going to fix it, it's, you know? I mean, try her out. Oh, that doesn't work. Money, yeah, that'll work. A car, you know? Because I've got this God-shaped hole, that same hole I was telling you about before. I didn't realize it was a hole that was God-shaped. See, for me, what I try to do is I try to fill that hole with all this other stuff. And because from the first time I ever came into AA, I talked about this hole in my gut. And my sponsor explained to me that hole was a God-shaped hole. But see, I try to use anything else to fill it. And no matter what, when I see God, when I see that solution, it always looks too small. It never doesn't look like the right size, but a woman does. She's going to fit just perfect, you know? Money is just beautiful. That'll fill it all in. A car will fill it in. A job might fill it in. I try all these other things to fill this God-shaped hole. Nothing fills it. It always falls out. It always ends up hollow and empty again. So I've walked through my life with that in my gut. The only thing that seemed to close it up just enough where I could breathe was alcohol. The only thing that seemed to close it up just enough when it came down to anything else, I'm the guy that I'll try anything if I think it's going to make me feel better. By the time I got to the end of my drinking, I'm out on an Indian reservation in North Dakota. And we're out of booze and we're out of drugs and I'm real shaky in the morning and a guy comes out with a bottle of Pine Sol. And he pours Pine Sol through this bread into a quart jar and he hands it over to the guy next to me. And that guy takes a little sip off, makes a face and doesn't die. So I down half the quart jar. You don't drink Pine Sol because you enjoy the minty freshness of it, you know? I mean, you don't drink Pine Sol because you really want to feel clean inside, you know? You don't do that. You do that when you're trying to shut this thing off and trying to get this hole closed enough where you don't have to feel like you have to die. And I was at that spot over and over and over again. And I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't mean to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't want to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. For me, it's the last stop on the block. I don't have a choice in life right now. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had four felonies hanging over my head. I had been disowned by my family. I'd been stripped of all the athletic scholarships I'd ever had. I was working construction. And I went to my first AA meeting on a Thursday, and I hadn't showered since Sunday. And I had this kind of nasty afro thing going on with chunks of concrete in it. And I had this nasty goatee and these patches. I got burned when I was a kid. And hair doesn't grow in right here on these two spots on my face. So I got these patches coming out here and here and down here. I kind of look like a chia pet on crack, you know? It'd be like Don King on acid, you know? Coming out over here. I mean, that's how I look. I look terrible. And I smelled 10 times worse than that. And I was disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. I'm not coming out of my work boots. I'm passing out. And I'm not coming out of my work boots. So I'm funky. And I walk into this first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I walk into this meeting, and these people there, I went right at the end. Right as it's getting ready to start, you know, and I'm sitting there and I'm watching them from the trees, you know, and it's like 7:59, the meeting starts at 8 o'clock, and the last guy is out there kicking the last smoker in the door saying, go on, get in, it's time to start the meeting. And I go up there and that guy looks right at me and he goes, hey, welcome, and he shakes my hand. And I'm like, what is this, you know? Because, see, I'm the kind of guy that his family just told him that they don't want him around anymore. That I'm dead to them. I'm that guy. The guy that his mother takes the graduation pictures and the family pictures and tore him off of them and put them back in the frame because they just wanted to forget that I even existed. I'm that guy. And this guy says, welcome to me. So I go in there, I reacted like any newcomer. I couldn't believe it. These people were smiling and they were happy. And they were joking, but the guys, they were winking at each other and hugging and stuff, and I wasn't all down for that. They were like, you know, and everything else, and so all this stuff's going on, and I get into this meeting, this guy gets up there, he starts telling his story, and his story, I knew what had happened. They had been watching me on surveillance and had called you people, and it was a scheme because there is no way. Because guys don't talk about that kind of feeling, you know. That doesn't happen. And this guy's telling my story. And I got the heck out of there. I listened to that first speaker, and I ran away. And I went over, and I did the only thing I knew how. I grabbed that first beer. I'm the guy that when I grab the first beer before it's even to my lips, when I hear the ksh, I just know it's going to be all right. I just know it's going to be all right. When the sweat comes down a bottle of beer, when it's sitting there, it's like a newborn baby's tears, man. I mean, I just know when I see it, I know what it's going to do. It's going to fill that hole up. I'm going to be able to not feel like I have to die at that moment. So I know it's time. And I grabbed that first beer and I cracked it open and I didn't get that feeling. My mind wouldn't quit running. And saying, you're a loser. Look at you. You're a loser. When was the last time you showered? When was the last time you brushed your teeth? Your family doesn't want you. You lost your scholarship. You're a loser. What is wrong with you? Somebody said, welcome you tonight, and you ran away? And I know that I had grabbed a second one sometime in there, and I don't even think I finished that. And I went home, and my family had left, and that was on a Thursday night. I'm not a guy who got here through treatment or detox or any of those other things. I got here detoxing on my own. and it almost killed me. I threw up blood, I threw up bile, I went to seizures that were insane. Because by this time in my drinking, I'm putting anything in my system that I think will make me feel better. And I am kicking things that I didn't even think that you could ever kick those things. And I'm sitting there and I'm dying on the floor of my room. And I'm praying to God to kill me. Because see, I've got this problem with God. I have this big, big, big problem with God. See, God, he's not there anymore. Because see, I grew up, my dad's a Baptist minister. Okay? From Florida. Southern Baptist. Figure it out. My dad was the kind of guy when the Jehovah's Witnesses, I don't know if you guys have Jehovah's Witnesses over here, but in the States, okay, you do, great. Then you know how big of a pain in the butt they are. When they would come to the house and knock at 8 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, my dad would invite them in, sit them down, get them a cup of coffee, and say, I'll be right back. And he would come with the sword of God and sit down, and they would leave there wondering if they should be Jehovah's Witnesses anymore. That's the kind of guy my dad is. My mom is Lutheran. And in North Dakota, it's North Dakota, all right? I mean, we're about as Scandinavian as you guys are. I mean, seriously. I mean, we have a movie named after us in Fargo, for God's sakes. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's Lutheran up there, man. I mean, so there's no Southern Baptist stuff. So my dad is hammering me with the Bible at home. And my mom is like, we're going to go to church. And we're going to this strict Norwegian Lutheran church. I mean, it's practically Catholic. It's so strict, you know. And I'm sitting there and I'm spun. Because my idea of God is this Old Testament idea of God. It's this Old Testament idea. If you do anything wrong, Sodom and Gomorrah, you know. You cross them 40 days, 40 nights, you're all going down, you know? And the idea that if you get too powerful, he sends in a woman to cut off all your hair and destroy you. And I couldn't have any of that, you know? I can't have any of that. And I just can't understand why this God thing is such a big deal. See, I graduated as the number one student in my confirmation class. I got to give the sermon the next Sunday at church. See, I was given a biblical idea of God that I was afraid to death of. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous when I walk into this first meeting and I see the word God in the steps. So that doesn't work for a guy like me. God works for good people. God works for people like you. He doesn't work for guys like me. He doesn't work for people that do the things I do and hurt people the way I hurt them. He doesn't work for guys with cuts in their hands and blood that isn't his on them that he doesn't know where it's come from. He doesn't work for guys like me. It's easier for me just to pretend that he doesn't exist and take over the role of him myself. So that's what I do. I become God. And that's what I brought into Alcoholics Anonymous. I left that night, I detoxed over those next 4 days. By the fourth day, I could finally keep water down. And I stayed sober courtesy of cable TV. I was 20 years old, and my mommy was dropping me off at my construction site, you know? I'm a big man. Mom, can I have a ride to work? You know? I'm doing that deal. And my mom's dropping me off and picking me up from the construction site. And I stay sober that next week, and I'm insane, and I'm going crazy. Never mind, I could have went to a different AA meeting. But the one on Thursday, I thought maybe those guys might have been still smoking something because they were so happy, and somebody said welcome to me. So I'm going back to that one. And I come and I get back to that Thursday, and I shave some of these patches off, and I could have cut my hair or something, but I'd actually just washed it, you know, and I put a ball cap on that sat about this high, and I go walking into this meeting, and I come walking up the sidewalk, and there's a group of people outside, and that group of people outside is standing there in a circle, and I can hear the laughter as I'm walking up the sidewalk, and I'm like, what is that? Because see, the kind of drinking I'm doing, the only time we're laughing is if somebody's falling down the stairs, you know, or if you're pushing somebody down. Or if something like that's happened, or when you shave off people's eyebrows, you know, when they pass out, you know. I'm laughing at that. That's funny to me. And these people are laughing because they've got a light in their eyes and they've got life. And I'm sitting there trying to figure out what I got to do. And as I'm coming up the sidewalk, there's a circle. And the circle, and this may not have happened, but in my mind's eye, it's exactly how I see it. It's like the circle went and opened up a little gap. And out comes this guy walking down the sidewalk. And I'm like, oh, great. They saw me run out last week. They're not going to let me stay. They're going to throw me out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't been here yet. And you know how your mind starts going when you're new, you know. And I've got my fist clenched ready to go, you know. And I'm just ready to go. And this guy comes up to me and he saves my life because he puts his hand out and he says, hi, my name's Jeff. You're new here, right? Welcome. He didn't take a crack at me. He didn't take a poke at me. He didn't make a smart mouth comment to me, because if he did, I'd have swung as hard as I could and you'd have a different speaker tonight. What he did is he welcomed me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he took me into that circle of laughter. And there was people there, and they were running around, and they were doing stuff, and everybody's smoking, and everybody's having a good time. And we get downstairs, and that night they go, say, would you read how it works for us? And I'm like, sure, you know. And I'm just nervous. I mean, I'm sweating. I'm just, you know, terrified. I start reading. I get done with the meeting, and this guy comes up to me after the meeting. God bless him. God, he's a good member of AA. He comes up to me after the meeting and he says, you know, when you read step three tonight, and I've been sober for like 5 years, when you read step three tonight, a light went off for me and I finally understood what it meant. And I was like, well, I'll read every week if y'all want me to, you know. I was excited, you know. I mean, it's amazing. It was amazing because all of a sudden I realized I can save these people, you know. It's going to be great, you know. I'm going to read for them. I'm going to do some stuff. A lot of these guys need to work out. I'm going to get them to the gym, you know. I mean, we're going to do something here, you know. And I got all this great stuff going on, and that guy saved my life. He got me into Alcoholics Anonymous, and the most important thing you get a newcomer into, and it was action. He got me into action to the nth degree. We were North Dakota, and Minot, where I sobered up, is remote, you know. You have to drive like all kinds of places just to go to good AA. So we would load up and we would drive 12 hours down to a conference in Nebraska, or we'd drive 11 hours out to a conference in Minneapolis, and we would go and do all this stuff just to go hear guys like Bob and Clancy and Johnny and Jim and all these great AAs and Alcoholics Anonymous. We would drive everywhere just to get a hold of them, and we'd sit there and Clancy called me a puke. Clancy called me a puke, you know. And you're just excited, you know. And you're walking in the midst of giants. And we spent that time running around all over Alcoholics Anonymous. And the thing that my sponsor did with me right away is, and a lot of people, they get really upset and they go, that's terrible, whatever, you know. It worked for me. I was 2 days short of 2 weeks sober. And we're back at that same Thursday night meeting. And there was a part of that format that said, anybody willing to be a sponsor, raise your hand. And this guy elbows me, and I throw my hand in the air. Okay? This kid comes up to me afterwards with a big afro, with his pants hanging down to here. Every other word is something I can't say from the podium, but it involves your mother. And this kid is sitting there, and he comes up. He's like, I was wondering if you sponsor me, you know. And he was always grabbing himself, you know. And I'm just like, this kid's just like me, you know. And I go, are you going to coffee? And the kid goes, yeah. I said, great, I'll talk to you there. So I go up and I'm like, this kid just asked me to sponsor him. I don't even know what a sponsor is, blah, 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 blah. And Jeff said, here's what you're going to do. I'm going to get you out here right now. We're going to get into this book right away. And that guy sponsored that kid through me. And he was in a lockdown facility for juveniles, and I would drive out to meet him every Sunday right after I got done meeting with my sponsor. So I'd had everything highlighted and written and everything like that in the big book. And I didn't realize that the staff could come in and sit in the back and listen to what you're saying to these kids. I didn't realize there wasn't any privacy. So I'm in there, and I'm going through the book, repeating everything I had just heard. And this lady comes up, and she goes, my gosh, she said, you have a very profound knowledge of Alcoholics Anonymous. How long have you been sober? And I go, about 6 weeks, you know? And she looks at me and I go, hey, baby, some of us just catch on to this thing quicker than others. And I was off and running. And from that day to now, I've always been in an active role of having a sponsor and being sponsored and sponsoring Alcoholics Anonymous. I've always been involved in in H&I, in some way, shape, or form, I started running a juvenile detention center meeting in Minot. Moved into Fargo. When I moved to Fargo in 1999, I was one of 12 people that started a group called the Northern Plains Group. And that meeting started with 12 of us, and right now, 2 days ago, that meeting had a little over 240 people in it on a Tuesday night. And I go to that meeting, and in that meeting, we do a lot of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was out, and I was doing all this stuff in AA. But see, what happens when you're a guy like me, I've got this big problem with God. See, this hasn't went away. It's just been hidden. Because when I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, I hear what you have to say about God, or I hear what that guy had to say about God, or what she said about God, and I just grab that and I say, okay, I'm going to use that. And I grab that and I start going to other meetings that they don't go to, and I start talking about this God that's not personal to me. Because, see, I don't want anybody in AA to not think I'm one of those spiritual guys. I don't want people in AA to don't think that I don't have a God. So I pretended to believe in something that was there, and it was there enough where I didn't have to go out and drink. But I'm one of those guys that's always had to be very active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've always had to go to a lot of meetings. I've always had to be involved in a lot of service work in AA and in the district and in the service in the general service. And I've had to always be in that. So I was always surrounded in Alcoholics Anonymous by Alcoholics Anonymous. But inside, I always felt that shallow and hollow and empty. Because, see, I've still got this God-shaped hole. I still had that God-shaped hole when I was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous almost 8 years. And my life was spinning out of control, and I was burning it to the ground sober. On the outside, I looked like this active member of AA. But the thing is that I'm the kind of guy that stays active and then judges you for not being as active as me. I do that. I'm the guy that sits there on his mountaintop, and I've got my AA resume right here. You don't say anything to me. You don't sponsor enough people to say something to me. You don't speak at enough conferences to say something to me. You don't do enough service work to say something to me. You better shut your mouth. You don't realize. I do AA. I don't know what you think you do. If you got AA light or AA diet or whatever the heck you got going on, this is AA. You know? And I've got this entire thing sitting there. I believe that I am Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm the kind of guy that sits there and goes, if Bill Wilson were alive, he'd be a member of my home group. You know? I've got that kind of judgment. I am that guy that I sit on this mountaintop and I look down at everybody else and I wonder why you're not as wonderful as me. And I sit there and I start hammering through and I start ripping everybody to shreds. And I'm wondering why, when I step on the toes of my fellows, they're retaliating. And I'm wondering why I don't have a friend in Alcoholics Anonymous. Literally, I don't have a friend. Because I'm unbearable to be around. Because I'm the guy that it talks about in the 12 and 12 that I've become so miserable that I judge my own friends of the very character defects that I myself possess. I'm that guy. I'm the guy that sits there and will shred you to pieces by looking at you because you don't do it like me. And I'll tell you what that gets you. That gets you into the loneliest, deadliest spot that I've ever been in my life. I was more miserable than I ever was in my life. Because I wanted to die, and on the outside, I'm sitting there with my AA resume plugged in. And my scoreboard. See, I keep the scoreboard in my head. It's invisible. You can't see it. But you don't realize it when I go, and I pull it up, and it's going, ding. And your side doesn't move, you know? And all of a sudden, as soon as you say something to me, like you, either that or even worse, you don't do my will. If you don't do my will, my side starts going, ding, 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 and your side is done. And I just sit there and I'm like, it is 10 million to nothing. Don't you realize how much I've done for you? Don't you realize how much I do for AA? You know? And I just freak out and I scream and I yell and I intimidate. And I like to win by intimidation. You know, and I intimidate and I crush people and I break spirits. I break spirits because I don't have one of my own. And I'm dying in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, smack dab in the middle of AA, as the co-chairman of the state roundup, as the past chairman of the inner group, as a guy. I was so sick. I was sponsoring guys and I would keep a tally of how many guys I sponsored, and then I would keep a tally of how many guys they sponsored and how many guys they sponsored, and then I'd sit in the AA meeting with my cell phone and turn it to calculator mode, and I would punch in the numbers, and then I'd figure out the exact amount of percentage of people in that meeting that were under me. You want to talk about sick? I was God. And I am just killing myself in AA. And the thing that was the most terrible through that whole entire deal is, see, my life was coming apart. And I'm blaming God. See, about 4 years ago, I had 7 surgeries in 5 months and almost lost my leg. Terrible deal. I had terrible infection and I'm blaming God. How can you do this to me? I answer the phone at 3 a.m. I'm the past chairman of the intergroup, for God's sakes. You know, and I sponsor people and I speak places and I do all this stuff. How can you do this to me? This is supposed to happen to those inactive people who don't do anything, who judge me. You know, that's what's supposed to happen to. And I'm laying in a hospital bed with a cavern in the back of my leg. And my wife and I, my little girl's going to be 5 in May. And see, I'm a bad person. And I think God's got it in for me because I'm a bad person. I came to AA tainted. When I was in high school, I got a girl pregnant and we gave the baby up for adoption. When I was in college, I got another girl pregnant and we had an abortion. And I just know God's punishing me for doing those things. And my little girl, my wife's going to have our baby, and she goes into distress. She goes into this terrible distress, and all of a sudden, every time she has a contraction, the baby's heartbeat's going to drop. And I sat there, and I'm like, see, you're going to get me now after all this? What are you doing? I can't believe in something that is that vengeful. See, I got this big problem with God. The same God that when my family, when I was about a year sober, went off a cliff and dropped 110 feet in Yellowstone National Park in the States and none of them died. That same God that was there for them. I can't believe in Him. See, I can't believe in any of that stuff. And I sit there in this... All this stuff is happening. And I hit my knees and I prayed that day. See, I'm the kind of guy, I pray because I'm robotic, you know. Sponsor says you pray, you're on your knees, you pray, you get up, you blah, 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 thanks God. Off the way you go. I'm that guy. I was that guy. There's times I can still be like that guy today, but I was that guy. See, I don't have this connection very well. And that day... My wife goes in for an emergency C-section, and they pull my daughter out. And I will tell you something. She came out, and when I grew up real tough, real hard, and I grew up in not the ideal household. And I just knew the second that I found out my wife was pregnant, I went and got Dr. Seuss books. And I read this book, What to Expect When You're Expecting, cover to cover. And it said in there, if you read to the belly, that the baby will understand your voice. So I'm up there and I'm reading to this belly. And in the middle of the night when my wife is sleeping, I reach over and I touch her stomach. And I just close my eyes and I start moving my fingers and the baby would kick. And I'm just sitting there and I'm like, see, that's my reward. That's my gift back for all the stuff that I do in AA is I'm going to get one of these. See, I'm on a reward system with God, too. I don't know if you guys, maybe you guys don't ever do that, but see, I think God owes me something if I do some stuff in AA, you know. And everything was going to be taken from me. And what ended up being given to me was a little girl that came out 9 pounds, half ounce, 20 inches long, screaming at the top of her lungs. And I go over there and I put my finger in her hand. And I said, it's okay, Tiana, Daddy's here. And she quit screaming and she rolled over and she opened her eyes because she heard my voice. That isn't supposed to happen to guys like me. But it was beautiful. And my life was moving forward and my life was moving onward. And I got all this stuff going in AA. See, I forget about stuff like that. when God takes care of me. I forget about that. I just get upset when the rewards aren't where I think they're supposed to be. See, what I don't understand is that God pays real good. See, he's got this great payment deal for God, for people like us. You do his work, and it says in the work, you do his work, he takes care of you. And I see the thing is that I think by taking care of me, I'm supposed to get a Jaguar and a 6,000 square foot house and make about 1.5 a year. You know, I think that's what I need. That's not what I need. What I need is constant trials to keep me humble. What I need, apparently, as God sees fit, is constant humility, like being thrown off a horse in Iceland, you know? Like a bruise the size of a dinner plate on my hip and butt, you know? I don't know what your God does. My God's funny like that, you know? I mean, it's one of those deals. And in November of 2004, a guy that's here tonight, and I really have a tough time looking at him because I'm... came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and he came up to North Dakota doing what he does, anything he's asked to do in AA. And the guy showed up that night, and he started talking to us. And he gave this talk on Sunday morning. And the talk saved my life because what I heard was a solution for the judgment machine that exists inside of me that I've been trying for years to fight alone in AA. And what I heard is that I have to get reinvested back into what I'm supposed to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, not what I think I deserve. And I had to start taking actions that I didn't want to take, but we did. As a result of those actions, in the last year, we've started 9 H&I meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's hospitals and institutions. That's when we're going into the jails, into the treatment centers, into the detoxes, into the halfway houses. We've started 9 new meetings in the last year that are reaching alcoholics. As a result of those same actions that he was telling me to take, I got reinvested back in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, reinvested into the fact and the point where that solution that has been present, of the very thing that I thought, because I thought step two was all about finding God, and it wasn't. It was about being able to accept one that I believed in, because in the bottom of page 62, it tells me, first of all, because I'm an idiot, so the book says it very plainly, first of all, we have to quit playing God. It doesn't work. That's all I did. I played him and played him and played him. And as a result of that, I've been given a lot of gifts today that have allowed me to deal with a lot of stuff. November this last year, my father-in-law got diagnosed with pancreas cancer, and him and my mother-in-law have been living with us. And I love my in-laws. We get along great. We get along wonderfully. But when you've got 2 extra people in your house, no matter how much you love them, you really learn that love and tolerance of others is their code. And I think what they learned more is that they had to learn to love and tolerate me, you know? And I'm sitting there and I'm dealing with this, and my father-in-law is this 205-pound blacksmith, you know? And he's this big, he's got the bald head, and the, you know, the Thor hammer, you know, coming down. They used to pound wind shears by hand, you know. And this guy's just solid. And in January, or in February, he's in my house. And he comes out of the bathroom and he's shaking his head. And I go, "What's wrong, Tim?" And he says, "They're gone, aren't they?" And he's already lost about 50 pounds. And I'm watching this guy go through this in my house. And my mom got diagnosed with a brain tumor. And I'll find out when I get back to the States. They're going to try to do a surgery with her, but they're only giving her about 20% chance of coming off the table. So I've got these things going on. I don't blame God today. See, what I realize is I have this conception of God that's very simple. Very, very simple. And if you're one of those people that struggles like me and you're on the way out of Alcoholics Anonymous and you don't even know it, because you're playing God in your life like I did. It's real simple. I was the nightmare newcomer, and I would say things to my sponsor like, "If God is so great, why are there wars? Why is there destruction? Why is there famine? Why do little kids get hurt and those nasty things happen? If there's God, why does that stuff go on?" And see, what I realized is that anything that's good that comes out of me at all has nothing to do with me at all. It has everything to do with God. Everything to do with him. Anything good that I say, anything good that I do for my fellow man, anything I do to help his kids is of him. It is not of me. The bad things, the sick things, the destructive things, the ungodly things in the world because of people that are just like me that don't have him and don't have a solution. That's why those things happen. So my conception is very simple, that anything that's good and anything that's good that comes of me is God. Anything that's not is because of sick people just like me. Just like me. And as a result of that today, I have a connection. I have a connectiveness with guys I sponsor. A guy named Brent I sponsored flew all the way from the States here with me, paid out of his pocket to come, and came here with me to Iceland. And don't think it was because he wanted to hear me talk. It's because he heard you guys have the most beautiful women in the world in Iceland. That's the thing I've been told. I have never heard anyone anywhere that has the most wonderful of everything besides Iceland. But you guys always throw per capita at the end, you know? So we have the best this, per capita. And I've been hearing that for 3 days, you know? But what I will tell you is that what I do know is that you guys take care of people better than I've ever been taken care of. And that's not per capita. That's anywhere I've ever been. You've opened your hearts and you've opened your homes to me. And my life is better today for having met you and been having experienced the people and the things that are here. And it's a wonderful, wonderful gift in Alcoholics Anonymous that I have today. I get to come a place like this and spend time with people that I love. My sponsors here and Brent's here, a guy I sponsor, and people that I meet that I now love. See, I've got this big heart, and it always is looking for something to fill it in more. So I end up coming to love people in Alcoholics Anonymous. See, one of the reasons why we do a lot of what we do back where I'm from is that those 4 days when I almost died on the floor of my room, we grab fresh guys and we bring them down and we detox them. We take shifts and there's always somebody with them. So when they come out of that, they're there and they don't have to be alone. And we do that. And you go through something with a guy like that and he's coming down and he's just dead to the world. And he comes in, and the first time you see the lights on, it's hard not to fall in love with him. It's really hard not to fall in love with him. And when you go through and you see somebody that's getting to see their kids again, you go through and you see somebody the first time they come out and they say, "I'm not on probation anymore." Or when they look at you and they say, you'll never guess what happened. I'm going to graduate from college. It's hard not to fall in love with them. And my life today is full of that and full of those people. And I am grateful to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am grateful that I have a sponsor that is louder than my head. I'm grateful today that I have a connection with people that allows me to be able to stay here. See, I like staying here. I don't, that judgment that almost killed me, the thing that ended up almost killing me on that whole end of the deal was this. That little girl that I loved jumped on my lap. And I grabbed her, and I shook her, and I screamed in her face. And I saw terror in her eyes. I become a monster in my own home. And if there's anybody out there today that's doing that kind of stuff, and that kind of stuff's going on in your life, I just hope that you have that you find the solution for that judgment that is here. There's people here that have that solution this weekend. 2 days after that, I've never been a guy, I've never hit a woman in my life. And 2 days after that, my wife is sitting there and she plugs the toilet. You know? I mean, come on. And I'm plunging on this toilet, and I'm plunging on this toilet. Why am I plunging so much? Because she got rid of the good plunger, you know? The one you can suck a bowling ball through a garden hose with, you know? That plunger. And she buys this crappy designer plunger because it matches. And I'm working with this thing, and I'm just furious, and I'm disconnected from God, and I hate myself. And I'm sitting right there in the middle of it, and I'm looking at it, and I'm just, gah! And she goes, "Let me try." And I say, "Fine, whatever you do, don't flush the toilet." She does like 8 strokes and hits the plunger. I grabbed her and I threw her across the room in front of my daughter. I'm not proud of that. But it proves to me what judgment can do. I love my wife, and I love my little girl. That same little girl is going to be in national commercials in the next year. She's beautiful, which means she looks nothing like me. I love them. And judgment made me think that they didn't appreciate me enough. And I became a monster in my own home. And I destroyed everything I touched. And today in Alcoholics Anonymous, my little girl, we're at a photo shoot. And I sit her down and she's looking in the mirror. And this girl, she'd never had makeup on before. And this lady puts a little blush over, or a little eyeliner over her eyes, a little shadow. And then she puts this little shiny lipstick on her. And she looks back at me from the mirror, and she looks back at me, and she says, "Daddy, am I beautiful?" And I said, "Yeah, you're damn right, honey, you are. I have a life today I don't deserve, and I have people today that I get to see the beauty in. Today I look for the God in you. The God in me will search out and find the God in you if I allow it to. So today I have great gifts and I have great people to share them with. And today I've found some of the greatest gifts in the world. And I'm glad that they're the same gifts that are here in Iceland. Thank you for your hospitality. Thank you for your kindness. And thank you for letting me be a part of your life."